welcome everybody. I think maybe the best thing to do, best place to start would be to kind of all introduce ourselves. I'm John. I'm one of the organizers behind this space and behind Red Emma's, which is a couple blocks south. And I'm excited to see people here today. It's a kind of interesting little experiment we're doing here. I'll talk a little bit more about what we had in mind, but we should just get to find out who everybody is first.
I'm Kate. I'm an editor with AK Press. We're a collectively owned anarchist-oriented publishing house. I'm also one of the Baltimore Free School organizers and one of the founders of Red Emma's.
Hi, my name is Nifu Emmanachi. I'm a Baltimore-based school organizer and free artist. And I'm also a principal organizer for the National Center for African Communitarian Culture.
My name is Andrew. I'm a student in Little Else at the moment, recent transplant to Maryland from Florida, and very pleased to be here. Visited Red Emma's when I was visiting before. Happy to see others.
I'm Clayton. I'm also part of the Red Emma's shebang, and I've been away for a year and just readjusting getting back away from Baltimore.
My name's Ben. I am PhD student in the English department at Hopkins, and I work on 16th and 17th century English literature. So it's sort of a bit removed from all of this stuff, but actually, I guess my research tries to think about 16th and 17th century early modern institutions and literary representation in a way that situates it in anticipation of sort of biopolitical apparatuses that define contemporary society, or at least people arguably define it. So.
My name is Scott. I work with a group of artists and activists called the Baltimore Development Cooperative and collaborate with Red Emma's and Free School and some things.
I'm Phil. I'm a colleague of John's from Towson University, and I also happen to be doing research in the area of cybernetics and what I call mobilism, which I might talk about a little bit later today.
Hi, I'm Alice. I'm from New York, and right now I'm working on my undergraduate thesis, at, which is basically going to be a mess. So,
I'm Natasha. I'm from New York. I'm a journalist. That's not what I was going to say, but I have a background in analytic philosophy.
I'm Rob, also from New York, just at the Sound Day School. Glad to be
here. Welcome. Hi. We were just going around and saying who we were. So.
Hi, my name is Josh. I'm from Philadelphia. I guess I'm a computer scientist and interested in political economy.
I'm Peter. I'm also from Philly. I'm a grad student in history of science and technology and doing some work on the counterculture and video and ideas about cybernetics in the 60s and 70s.
Awesome.
So I'm going to just mention that there's coffee and pastries and stuff over there. Please help yourselves. And the bathroom is that door back there. And shortly, when yoga finishes next door, we'll open up that door and get some more air conditioning flowing in here.
And also, this thing's being audio recorded, so if we don't want your voice recorded or whatever, we can edit stuff out.
Okay. So this is the Baltimore Free School. It's a project that's just about a year old at this point. And we've been playing around with a lot of different models for participatory education, right, for ways of figuring out how to do education outside of institutional context in a much more kind of self-organized way. And this is one of the things we're really excited to be doing is these kind of longer seminars. So this is the first one. It's a bit of an experiment. We've not done a seminar like this before. So I'm excited to see a ton of people here. And hopefully it's going to go well. It's also been conceived as a bit of a, this particular seminar and its particular focus has been, sort of came out of a desire to try out the seminar format before we did our the sort of larger seminar we're going to be doing this summer, which is going to be a two-day one with Brian Holmes, whom some of you may recognize the name. He's an artist, cultural critic, theorist, philosopher, historian, all around kind of neat guy. He's going to be coming on August 7th and 8th.
Yes.
Yeah. To do a seminar called Fault Lines and Subduction Zones, the Slow Motion Crisis of Global Capital. And there's a bunch of people coming down, some people from New York, some people from elsewhere, to participate in that. That's going to be looking kind of from many, many different angles at the sort of long-term crisis that we're in now. Like, what are the sort of parameters that are, you know, extending beyond just the sort of incidental moments of the financial crisis that we're living through? And this sort of techno-political access is one of them. So we've decided, since the Cybernetic Hypothesis text became available in English translation, to sort of convene a little seminar to talk about that. Why this text? I mean, it's an interesting text. There's definitely obviously been an upsurge in interest, at least within, you know, with the arrest of the Tarnak Nine, with the release of the Coming Insurrection, obviously all this Tikkun stuff, which, you know, is dating back to 1999, 2001, has obviously started to get a lot more attention. So, you know, that's one of the reasons we sort of decided to do this. The other thing I think was that, and to speak for myself here, but, you know, coming of age politically during like the last years of the last millennium, there's a certain kind of horizon of politics that was kind of coextensive with the development of the internet, right? And this is something that's obviously had a lot of phases, but, you know, thinking about growing up with the internet, thinking about coming into politics alongside the development of certain kinds of electronic networks, certain kinds of metaphors, certain kinds of ideas of social organization that are drawn from them. You know, and for a lot of people here, I suspect that defines a lot of their horizon. And I think trying to problematize that, trying to critique that, is a good thing. And it's certainly something that, you know, is not, you know, it's not specific to, you know, people who are getting politicized in the 90s, right? Certainly the sort of interchange or the interface between technology and politics goes back a lot longer. And that's one of the things that's kind of interesting about this text, right? Is this text talks about the prehistory, right? This isn't a text that is about just sort of talking about, you know, what's going on right now, what's going on with, say, you know, politics of information and control in, you know, early years of the 2000s. But this is a text that really tries to do this excavation, this work of discovering what was really going on at the start of this. What were the ideas? What were the, you know, what was the intent? How was this project conceptualized? How did it come together? And so it kind of goes into, you know, if we're thinking about this regime of control of capitalism that we're living in now, and we're trying to figure out where it came from, right? It tries to go back to this kind of, you know, this kind of moment where a lot of these things were being defined. So it's interesting from that respect. You know, it gives us an angle on our times that's maybe not the immediately obvious one. But that's not to say it's not an entirely unproblematic text, right? I don't know what people think, and I think we'll talk a little bit about this before we really get rolling. You know, but I would be surprised if everyone sitting around this table was like, yes, I agree with every single fucking thing in this text. There's nothing I disagree with. You know, myself, I've been doing a lot of research on this stuff. I've been looking at some of the same things that they're talking about here, and I have some disagreements with it. And I think those disagreements are really productive. You know, somehow I think we felt that it might be more fun to convene a seminar about a text that people might have problems and issues with, rather than convening a text in which everybody's going to be like, "Yep, I read it, two thumbs up, can't say anything more."
If you could find one.
Yeah. It's also interesting to talk about this text because it is a bit dated, right? This is a text from 2001, right? So this text is nearly a decade old at this point. So it would also be interesting to sort of, you know, just to sort of think about, well, how does this analysis hold up? You know, is this, you know, this wasn't written this past week, right? So thinking about what's going on there would be interesting. And then finally, I think there's just a larger project here that thinking about this text is kind of a springboard for, which is really, you know, how do we assess the consequences of something like cybernetics? Right? I mean, this is a hugely complicated, you know, it's a very simple, catchy name, right? But it's a hugely, hugely complicated historical moment. And trying to think about how to actually think through how that has defined where we are today and where we're going is something that, you know, I don't think we're going to get done today. But I think if, you know, one of the things that I would like to see come out of today is sort of thinking about what our sort of research agenda, right, for autonomous scholarship might look like, thinking about the sort of political critique of technology. And certainly this text is a start, and I think this text is the end. So those are just some ideas that we had thrown around. I'll let you know kind of how we had sort of thought about structuring the day. One of the things I think I want to do first off the bat is maybe just sort of see what people have to contribute. You know, we have a sort of schedule here that's very loose, very flexible, hoping the day will be like massively informal with a lot of interruptions and interjections and surprise guests and all sorts of stuff like that. One of the things I'd like to do is just sort of see what people might have to contribute. There obviously seems to be a lot of people here who have a lot of different perspectives on this material, and it'd be nice to sort of see, you know, if people felt like they would want to have a chance to sort of talk about their work or their ideas in a more structured way than to just sort of like wait for the point of the dialogue where you can jump in and, you know, give a 15-minute spiel. Other things we want to just to, before we do that, I'll just sort of lay out what else we were thinking about. I'm going to do a sort of very general and hopefully fairly quick introduction to cybernetics. I think that's one of the challenges with this is that I think, you know, many of us are like, oh yeah, cybernetics, right? I've read, you know, tons and tons of cybernetics, and I know exactly what these references are, and I know exactly what this history looked like, and I know what they're talking about when they say feedback and when they say, regulation. Like, we have this all in hand. I don't know if everybody here does. So I want to do a very quick, hopefully pretty informal introduction to cybernetics towards the beginning of the day. And then we're going to be joined by Alexander Galloway, who's on his way down from New York. Are we right now? So assuming the Bolt bus does not get horribly snarled in traffic, he should be here around 12 or 12:30. And he's going to talk a little bit about the sort of contextualizing this text within the larger Tikrin project. If you don't know, Alexander Galloway just translated that, or was one of the translators on Introduction to Civil War, which is one of the first Tikrin texts to come out in a really pretty solid translation with some sort of scholarly apparatus behind it. So that'll be exciting. There's a couple of people who have prepared some short presentations, short critical reactions to the text. Phil is going to talk a little bit about his work, thinking through what he calls nodalism and questions of subjectivity, right? Something like that?
Something like that.
Cool. I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the work I've been doing, thinking about cybernetics and thinking about whether make it sound kind of pithy, whether another cybernetics is possible, right? Looking especially at second order cybernetics and some of the more utopian strands in cybernetics, and trying to think about, like, you know, how those strands stand up to the kind of withering force of this critique that Tikkun lays out. I'm hoping there's going to be a lot of time for general discussion and ad hoc presentations if people want to, you know, kind of take the floor or the table or the gavel or whatever and sort of lay some stuff out. I also don't want to put anybody on the spot for that. And then if we have time and we're still into it, the other thing I was thinking that could happen is a screening of this movie Das Netz. It's a really interesting film by this German filmmaker by the name of Lutz Dombeck, who did very sort of similar in sort of inflection investigation of the birth of the internet, its roots in cybernetics, and connections to all sorts of tinfoil hat territory like MK Ultra and the Unabomber, much of which kind of holds up under historical examination and is all the more scary for that. But that's kind of a optional thing depending on how long this all takes. So I guess it'd be kind of interesting to start with just people's initial comments and people's initial thoughts and what they might want to be talking about today. And I don't know, I don't think we need to go around, but if people just want to throw some stuff out there. What do you think, Scott?
I guess, yeah, I found it really, I guess like the first maybe half of the book I thought was really interesting, just for kind of laying out this genealogy of development of cybernetics, and a lot of that stuff was pretty new to me. And then I don't know, maybe some more of the questions I have are regarding like the sort of response that, that they're proposing, you know, these strategies of resistance.
I guess this was sort of a question that for me was sort of lingering up until maybe three quarters of the way through, and then in section 7, I don't know which versions people have, but I got the one that was linked from the website. But in section 7, I was a little bit surprised, but also really interested at the moment when suddenly, the writer suddenly kind of rails against Lake Guattari, a lot of his turn towards eco-politics, but then also in the way that he uses his example in the beginning of section 7, he imagines, Guattari in this sort of schoolboy mode, really getting off on a certain type of critique and theorization that the writer associates with clearness and distinctness. And as far as I could tell, it seemed like the issue there is that the sort of isolation and clarity becomes inevitably a technique of power. And to that extent, necessarily becomes routed into this binarization or, into this sort of, flow of cybernetics. But then, immediately after that, he jumps into this idea of, the insinuation and ellipsis, and moves back into a very, Deleuzean way of speaking about that idea. And so I guess, this would be the most isolated or immediate moment where I saw this happening, but maybe in a larger scale too, through the whole work. I'm curious about the way that clarity in the prose and in the ideas here operate, because it seems to me that the writing is actually quite clear and distinct. It's very technical, and it's not technical in a way that strikes me as jargony, which is one of the things that I like about Tikkun. A lot of people I know sort of make that claim that Tikkun's ideas are, too philosophical, too jargony, but I don't think that's the case. I think they're actually pretty spot on for the most part. But if that's so, then how can we talk about the reconciliation between that aspect and this, sort of emphasis on obfuscation, fog, and subterfuge that, takes place in that way. I don't know if that made sense or not, but that's probably one of the major questions I had, sort of points of reaction.
Can I comment? Because mine kind of jumps off from there a little bit. One of the things that was really interesting to me in reading the text was trying to look at the way that time and temporality comes up at the beginning of the essay and then again at the end of the essay in kind of interesting ways, and just thinking about that sort of question of unclarity, fog, there you go. Looking at that concept, essentially where you end up in the end, I think, and I'm correct if I'm wrong, but where I think you end up in the end is that what we're talking about here is kind of breaking up flows in ways that almost seem kind of random, right? Like it's really about kind of breaking temporality down. It's about these sort of isolated but random, unexpected interventions, and that is kind of put into. That, I think, kind of goes back to the beginning, where what essentially is advanced is this concept of cybernetics, or of capitalism, I guess, as a kind of temporal politics, if that makes sense. I don't remember exactly where it is in the beginning, but there's some text about that. I'm not sure exactly where I'm going with this, but that sort of seemed to me something that was an interesting line to take in terms of trying to interpret what's going on in what's going on here in terms of developing a strategy of revolt or a strategy of breaking down these models that is kind of a temporal attack in and of itself.
I guess just talking about like general like reactions and interests, like the thing that you talk about, John, which are like a lot of my like political ideas are really tied to some of these technological ideas, like, you know, being I'm interested in them, so like, you know, separating how do like syndicalism from like self-regulating networks of self-healing, you know, like these are it's pretty deep for me. So like this essay that's like these ideas are the problem, and in fact, like they've taken over, and that's why we're in this mess. It's I think pretty cool, and this general trend of like which metaphors around technology are actually really problematic, and how does it relate to these questions of, and then the general question of like how do we think about technology and technology culture and this whole and how it functions in today's political like world and economic world is really interesting to me. As an essay, I thought it was actually really fun and really clear, but had like all kinds of problems all over the place. You know, like the historical stuff is weird, and like this the focus on like the break, like neoliberalism is all over, and this cybernetics world has now begun. Like how is the like equilibrium biology metaphor that different than the cybernetics metaphor, except for like flow of information stuff? Like that's kind of cute. Also, like not knowing the historical context, like this like attack on all sorts of people for being collaborators with the cyberneticians is pretty interesting. Like, why does he hate Negri so much? He hates him, you know. Right, or this like line about like communism will be a communism of robots. That's awesome. Right, like, awesome. Right, but there's also this whole critique of this like self-media thing. Like, you know, he's very dismissive of it, and it's like this. The question of like why is he attacking people that he's attacking? What is the context, and is that like a valid, like what is the strength behind that criticism? It's all interesting stuff to me. Yeah.
I'm sorry, John, we have to turn the air conditioning.
Okay.
It's far too hot in here to think. And actually I don't know which switch it is.
Okay.
Do
that's interesting to me, but I kind of thought that the critique of Benjamin was really good. But that might be something good to talk about.
Yeah, I mean,
like,
it's really spelled out,
yeah.
But I don't know how I feel about it or what
yeah.
it's motivated by. I think it'd be interesting to trace that out a little bit.
Yeah.
Or maybe I share some of those sympathies for regulation.
Yeah. I guess the first time I read Empire, you know, 10 years ago, I was really like, yes. You know, and then, but I think this is probably the best critique of Art Negri I've come across. I think it's pretty spot on. But people have thoughts about it, they want to tell me, I guess we should probably get some more ideas out of the table. Maybe.
Well, I guess I'll take a contrarian view, because I didn't think this was clear at all. And in fact, there's a lot of historical errors in here, a lot. There's substantial misrepresentation of what goes on in cybernetics, and almost no acknowledgement of second-order cybernetics.
What?
Of second-order cybernetics. I think that, for me, the greatest problem with this is that it assumes the rationality that it sees in cybernetics actually exists, and it assumes that that level of control is actually possible. When later cybernetic theory is not at all interested in closed rational ecosystems. It's much more interested in emergence. And I think that's something that this significantly doesn't do. so I don't know. I had a lot of problems with this text. I think it asks all the right questions, and I think anybody who does research in this area, these are all the things that you wind up talking about and being interested in. But ultimately, I don't see where this takes us. I don't really see where this leads. And as I said, I think it's very problematic the way that it actually portrays what cybernetics is about and its origins. For example, you know, the assertion that the ARPANET was developed as a missile defense system is wrong. That's not true. That's like one of the long-standing myths of cybernetics that recurs in here and becomes the premise for making other assertions about the cybernetic project. The same goes for this idea that cybernetics requires a hollowing out of the subject. I don't know where that comes from. This idea that the subject must be completely transparent, that's just asserted. There's no actual evidence for where that comes from. And in fact, the nature of the subject within cybernetics is much more complex than that. And in fact, transparency of the subject, I don't think is a thing you can ever achieve anything. So for me, the big problem with this text was it's kind of a strong argument. It's setting up its own portrayal of what cybernetics is in order to attack it without, I think, really looking in greater detail at what cybernetics is about.
Can I ask you a question about what you said? What's the difference between rationality, reason, and power in terms of how you're thinking about the way that this essay, because you said that you feel like it assumes rationality on the part of what it calls the cybernetic hypothesis, the way that cybernetics simulates itself in other systems. And I guess I was wondering, because it seemed to me like what they were assuming was not rationality so much as simply an operation of power.
Mm-hmm.
It's coding and realism, idea of power.
Mm-hmm.
That's different from reason and rationality. And so I was wondering why you would use rationality to characterize what they're talking about.
Well, because that's often perhaps confusing terms. This is something you often come across in critiques of cybernetics, is that it's about system rationality above all. So everything is geared towards the operation of the system. And that is certainly, I think, one of the implications of the way that this critique is undertaken, that everything is geared towards the rationality of the system and the guarantee of flows and that sort of thing. But in fact, I don't know that, aside from these kind of second-rate utopianists that I quoted in here, that anyone in the history of cybernetics has actually ever asserted that. And in fact, if you read like Matron and Varela, they constantly rail against the idea of system rationality.
Yeah, I mean, that seems right to me, but that also seems to me like that I think that's part of their critique, is that they're not making a claim that it's rational.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, it's simply a matter of, you know, it works more, the way it's more implicit in the operation of power, which are not implicitly rational,
mm-hmm.
but simply, you know, treat everything as fluctuation, which then is, you know, should be sort of absorbed into the system and decoded.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that there's an implicit rationality behind it, as if there were purpose.
Okay.
That's what I was saying.
Yeah, I would say that.
I didn't know if you were.
I don't mean rationality in the sense of sin.
Or purpose,
right? I mean functionality of the system in terms of rationality. That all the parts work together. Not that there's necessarily a purpose for it, but that what you're trying to do is optimize the functioning of the system. And that certainly is the operation of power.
Right.
Okay. Just to add one thing you said in terms of rationality, like, I do think, though, that there's like a sense that there are people, rational people, using cybernetics to control society that's implied in here. It's not just like an observation of the way things, like the way things are functioning. And I think that's kind of interesting to me, just the general question of like, what's being spelled out here in terms of how, like, are these like methods actually being used? What is he saying? Like, who's doing it? and how does this conclusion, which seems a little tenuously connected to the rest of it, like, how does it tie into that? Because normally people don't spell this out as a mechanism for societal control, and then so like, who are there actors, who are the actors, you know, right?
I think your essay is really spot on, but I'm also maybe worth bringing up that what they're critiquing isn't cybernetics, it's a hypothesis. And it's also not a history, it's a genealogy. So there's lots of purposes that these differences are worth. In many ways, it's a call to action. So, yeah, I mean, the way they talk about the sentimentality surrounding entropy and even Higgins theorems, nonsense, completely wrong, but could feed into a kind of, this is a possible way another system of control could come about through these feelings that were very real if they're informed. Spell out that geniality, understand the possible ways control can then be insidious and implemented, if not historically the case now or direct. But the hypothesis is true for that. We as people should be aware of that and consider how such a state of affairs could be resisted, as opposed to this is a historical continuation of modernism. This is how power did transfer. This is how people did react to entropic theories. So they did, but it's a possibility of a genealogy more reaching them than to historically. Maybe.
So you're thinking like it's got to be read in a way as this was a story that got told, and we're critiquing that story or that way of telling this story?
Well, just kind of a, here is a possible way of control shift that would be insidious and we wouldn't notice. I can spell out a genealogy of that, lead to whom, whatever, can spell out a genealogy of that for you. That is a plausible story, if not historically accurate, but does speak to a lot of historically relevant sentiments. Be aware of that, and be aware of how to resist it. So more of a call to action than a trapped tension. That's sort of how I see it. But I've also got historically wrong.
So one of the things I'm really interested in this text is they do a really good job, I think, showing how one can interpret cybernetics as the kind of schema for a mode of power, right? You know, in the same way that, like, say, Foucault, when he looks at, like, the police, right, he goes back to, what is it, Delmar's treatise on police, right, and he kind of picks it apart, and you're like, okay, I see what you're going at here, right, even though this isn't exactly how the police wound up, right? Like, I see the kind of mode that of power you're trying to talk about. What's interesting to me is that they don't really deal so much with cybernetics actually in power, right? So, like, cybernetics has this peak of being really actually listened to at, like, top levels of sort of international politics, right, around the, like, the Club of Rome, the sort of, you know, this kind of... this kind of early 1970, like, recognition of impending environmental and economic collapse, this kind of, you know, these kind of very high-level recommendations towards a kind of zero-growth policy, right? All of this feeding in, coming directly out of these kind of cybernetic theories of regulation. And I guess what's interesting to me is that that path gets abandoned, right? And there's a very, very definitive shift away from a cybernetic model, right? Or maybe towards a different kind of cybernetic model. So I guess that to me is kind of interesting. It's sort of figuring out, like, you know, this kind of the kind of unanimity of the hypothesis, right? Like, there is the cybernetic hypothesis, right? I would actually maybe, like, one of the ways I would sort of say, like, we need to problematize and sort of rethink this text is to think about, like, you know, the cybernetic hypotheses, right? Like, all the different there's different cybernetics floating around, right? Not just within there's the historical periodization of cybernetics itself, which is by no means as unified as they might make it out to be, but also in terms of cybernetics as a mode of power, or as a way of thinking power, the way power thinks itself. There's different philosophies floating around, connected to different sort of historical moments, different sort of historical assemblages. Any other sort of initial first comments?
I wanted to add also that the sort of range of things that we count as cybernetics seems like we have a lot of options, and it's something that varies from language to language, so that in Russian, cybernetics refer to everything having to do with computers. for the Soviet period, whereas I'm used to in English referring to a much narrower range that has to do with a specific academic genealogy and so on. And this is somewhere in the middle. I hadn't looked at any sort of French writings on cybernetics before the last couple days and reading this, and it looks like in general in French it's somewhere between the English and the Russian. And that translation seems like something we're thinking about, that we're talking about a somewhat broader range of phenomena than we might usually talk about in talking about the history of cybernetics in English.
Don't have the glance of doom.
You have the glance of doom, that's true. These readings were, for me, a complete introduction to the topic. In that context, it's a little bit difficult to really formulate, you know, just kind of being familiar with the terminology a little bit. It was interesting. At times, I had difficulty with the broadness. I often have difficulty with very broad and, at least to a novice, abstract-seeming arguments. I had a little bit of the same reaction that you were having because of that. That's from the position of knowledge of cybernetics, and just sort of a, okay, he's saying all these things, and I suppose that if I were more expert in, if I had knowledge of this field, I might agree with him, or I might really not. But I guess an example of the sort of clue that I had a little bit did come around the idea of transparency, that setting up transparency as something, it seemed to be set up as something that that cybernetics or cybernetic society posits as a universal good. This is something to be supported, and I don't really see that. Usually, when I think about transparency being put forward as a value, I see that being applied to not to individuals in the world, but to structures of power. That, you know, we're saying the structures of power that affect all of our lives should be transparent, so that we can affect some control over them. And it seems to be a very different. It seems like taking the same term transparency, which means one thing when it's being applied to individuals under surveillance, and another thing when it's being applied to structures of power that we do want to observe. And that term is being kind of used very bluntly and being confused and, you know, kind of taken across contexts like that, where I think our society does want to see transparency in structures of power. I don't think many people out there, that I know at least, want to hold up transparency of themselves as a good. So I wish that there was some more specificity sometimes in the document. That's really
important. I'll throw out some scattered. This was not only my first reading of cybernetics, but also my first reading a text by de Kooning. I guess I've been familiar with some of the communiques from their imitators writing English, but the style was a little familiar. And it has that strange mix of clarity, but it's like clarity the way an oracle is clear. It's simple, but very difficult. And that is, and this might be my ignorance of this kind of technique of like discourse, but genealogy, the way they engage it, almost seems to verge on like guilt by association at certain points. And it's actually the essay on Wiener himself, that Norbert Wiener, that Galison was one of the recommended readings. He sort of, like, even towards the end, he started putting in a critical light that method, that way he'd been proceeding of these, you know, well, the origins in military applications, of what does this actually mean now for this thing as it presents itself. So he was aware, but he made, I thought, a reasonable argument as to why it was a good way to proceed, which can be carried over to this. And so I guess in that, like, maybe the thing that interested me more than anything is it's something I had more purchase on than the issues on the surface of the text was their conceptual armature that they're working with was in some ways new to me, but in some ways old, particularly the way they seem to be working within Marxist categories and trying to understand this as a shift in the way values are produced. But at the same time, this was pointed out, this like, implicating every other theorist in the last 50 years into, besides a few, into accomplices of cybernetics. And the one name in here that I have any real familiarity with is Castoriadis. And it was an interesting comparison because he comes in for their sort of criticism as being like implicitly cybernetic. They don't go into any detail, of course, it's just like on a list. But in some ways, I think his way, I mean, this is name dropping, but you know, we get into this, it's interesting to people, of theorizing like control as being at the heart of capitalism is in some ways, control, whatever that may mean here, is in some ways more fundamental than what they're doing, or what do I mean by fundamental? That it pushes it even deeper into the heart of the problem, that it isn't a development of the production values, if that's really their argument, but it's something that's even before that. Which I read later, Castoriadis, parts of what he says. And that's some of the stuff that jumped out to me. But if everything you say about the historical stuff is being bogus, this is, like I said, my first, I don't know where that leaves us. I thought did you read the other essay? The one by the Gallison? Person about
I know Wiener.